Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
Let's talk about Troll Hunter.
Troll!
Yeah, I think we've all seen it.
I thought it was pretty good.
I liked it a lot.
I can't say I liked it a lot, but it's certainly the troll special effects were really good. The story was okay. It's like a Blair Witch or a Cloverfield where it's done from the point of view of a camera. Like
found
a
footage, yeah.
Actually, it's very much like Blair Witch where they say it starts off, we found two hard drives, and they unlock these hard drives.
The story kind of reminded me a lot of like that Flight of Dragons style of book by Peter Dickens. It's kind of where they take a fantastic creature and they play off of it as if it were real. They also did that with Spiderwick for fairies, and I think the Discovery Channel did a documentary on dragons based off of the Flight of Dragons book. But It basically goes like scientifically how these creatures really can exist, and they did explain that pretty well in the movie, like about how the trolls have multiple heads and how they're just kind of like growths on there. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. They kind of balanced it out well.
It did start kind of slow, but I didn't mind it, the beginning, all that much.
I didn't mind it.
Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of a tough thing to do. Like, if you start with, like, an action scene right at the beginning of the movie, yeah, it hooks people, but you don't really build up that tension, you know?
It doesn't really start with an action scene, though.
No, it doesn't, which is what I'm saying. Like, the two choices I see.
It doesn't at all.
Yeah, it doesn't at all. Like, the two things I kind of see is you can either start with a bang to kind of, like, hook people, or you can do the slow build up, but the quick hook might not have the tension.
I did quite like it. I think the found footage aspect of it was probably the weakest bit. I don't think it really needed it at all.
I think it hurt it somewhat. Like, there was parts in the movie where I'm like, okay, I've seen enough trees.
Yeah.
If it was just, like, a shot regularly, then they probably wouldn't have shown as many trees, I guess. Yeah, it seemed to hinder more than enhance.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand the documentary style that they were going for, and I think that was good, but I think it would have been better if they had shown it as like a real documentary, like these people were going out to take video of trolls and this is their handheld footage. But the ending kind of turned me off a little bit because it just cuts out because that's where the footage is supposed to end. But it's kind of, I could go for a little more. I could go for a more wrap up of an ending.
Not to spoil anything, but the ending is kind of implied, you know?
Of course, I understand what happens, but it would have been nice to see an ending happen rather than it just cuts out.
And also, how do you find that footage?
Yeah.
Like, the implied ending would imply that there wouldn't be any found footage.
Exactly. Right. Okay, yeah.
Blair Witch, the conceit works, because it's not necessarily somebody that would grab the found footage.
Right.
Cloverfield is the same. It's not like the monster's going to pluck that little tiny little video camera and crush it.
Right.
I don't want anybody to know I'm here.
Yeah, right.
But the acting was good. The special effects were really good. It seemed like kind of a low-budget Norwegian film, so that was a nice surprise. I was surprised how much screen time the trolls did get.
Yeah, I thought they were really good.
And like Chris said, when they talked about the trolls, it was interesting, and they were explaining stuff about the trolls. It seemed, I guess that's plausible.
Yeah.
It's what did Disney call it? The plausible implausible?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I like the little nods to troll stories, like the troll under the bridge and the three billy goats gruff. It's clever.
Yeah, it's cool. I also saw that other one, In Time.
That other troll movie?
Yeah, that other troll movie. Well, linking to Justin Timberlake, that other troll movie. Yeah. All right. He stars in it? Yeah,
this
troll
one
star.
Is also a movie. There's the link.
All right.
And what else? It was Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried. So, yeah, it wasn't as good as Troll Hunter. The premise is actually really cool, the idea
We talked about that in Bankers.
Yes. People are paid in time, and it costs time for services and products and things. I think the premise is far more interesting than the movie itself. I think a lot of the ideas that we talked about in Bankers would have made the movie a lot better.
Perhaps we should start writing movies.
Hello, Hollywood.
It doesn't take too long to find enough loopholes to kind of take the movie apart, but it's fun to watch, but it's not a good movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't recommend it?
Not really. And actually, I was a little disappointed. Amanda Seyfried, I've been becoming a pretty big fan of hers.
Well, that does actually connect to what we're talking about today. We just finished playing Time and Temp, which is obviously a time travel game made by Epidiah Rabitral, the same guy who created Dread.
Yeah, he actually recommended it to us.
Yeah, he did.
Posting on a webpage.
Yeah, thanks for that recommendation.
Awesome. And he's awesome. We can cut that out.
So the basis for Time and Temp is the players play as temp workers for this sort of agency that goes back in history and sort of fixes time. Because if things don't happen the way they should, then all of reality will kind of fall apart. I guess the main premise is that the people are temporary workers because temp workers have the smallest chronological footprint, and so there's the least chance of them kind of screwing up.
So that's the rationale behind
it. Yeah, that's the rationale.
Okay.
So the rationale is the more important you are, the bigger historical footprint you have.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the farther back in time you go, the more chance you have of setting off a cascade of effects that change reality.
I see.
So they calculated it and they said, okay, we need insignificant people who can't do this job for very long. Hey, temp workers, they're the perfect people for this job. So the game kind of is a mix of, here you have these insignificant temp workers given enormous power to travel anywhere they want in time. So it's supposed to be like a lighthearted, funny game.
And the way it works, it's actually really interesting. I've not seen a game like it before, but you have a matrix.
Hmm.
It's a kind of a big grid where you fill in all the different squares depending on what you roll. And there's some interesting mechanics about how many dice you roll and stuff, but as you fill in the numbers, there's more of a chance that you might get a duplicate number filled in the matrix, which can cause time paradoxes and things like that.
That was kind of the first time I had seen anything that worked with numbers like that.
Mm-hmm.
And upon first reading the rules, it seemed rather complicated. It's one of those kind of rules where you actually have to really lay it out and look at it before you kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah, and you can form patterns in the matrix. And if you do like 7 consecutive numbers, then you get synchronicity?
Yeah, a synchronicity token. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like a Benny or a style point.
But you can't spend it in kind of like time travel tropes. Like you can, I'll come back afterwards and set up this tool for myself or set up an agent for myself or something along those lines.
This is a very storytelling game, like it's a very narrative game. Because the only things that the players have to describe their characters is a short resume of 3 jobs and 2 associated skills or talents for each job. There aren't any stats or attributes. It's just those 3 things. And the way sort of task resolution works is you describe either the effort your character is putting out to achieve the task at hand, or you describe the effect, and then based on whether those 2 things are minor, major, or extreme, that'll tell you what size dice to roll. And then sort of if you risk failure or if you risk embarrassment or getting hurt, then that'll dictate how many of that dice you roll. And then you choose sort of if you succeed, you take the lowest number and plug that into the matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And as Chris said, it's kind of negative things happen when certain numbers get placed next to each other.
Yeah.
So there's no real reason to fail. Basically, failure is always a player option based on what number they want to put into the matrix.
Yeah, I mean, it looked pretty cool. Like I said, I haven't seen anything like it before, so I was really intrigued going into it.
Yeah, but before I played it, I wonder if it wouldn't have been better as a board game. Because you have a grid that is very much the focal point of the game.
Yep.
You have one type of dice roll. It's whether or not you succeed or not. You're not using any particular skill per se or any attribute. You're just rolling a dice and saying how hard you do it and what you would like to do. And I was wondering if you have like the matrix in the middle of a board or something and you're drawing cards or something like that, if that wouldn't make a better game.
Hmm.
I wondered how it would play as a role-playing game.
Hmm. Yeah.
I suppose
whether the matrix would enhance or distract from the play.
Right.
Because it does get very, I hesitate to say mechanical, strategic, I guess, is a better word, tactical.
A good word. Yeah.
Yeah.
In that if you can manipulate the matrix and the number placement a certain way, I mean, it does interrupt the narrative a bit, but if you manipulate it a certain way, you never really have to fail.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to be able to put your numbers in a place that's not going to be detrimental,
right.
And you can often find a place that's actually beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder, since this was the first time we were playing it, we started with a completely blank matrix. You're supposed to hold on to the matrix sheet, because if you ever go back to that time and that place, you use the same matrix. If you go back to that time and place, things are kind of supposed to get more difficult, or you have less of a choice.
I didn't see that part of it. That changes my opinion a bit, actually.
When you go back in time, you have to make a roll called the insertion roll, and you always start in the top right corner of a new matrix sheet. But that first time, you can just plug in any number you want. When you go back, you have to plug in that number, but now you have a lot of other numbers there, which makes it a little more difficult. Or
yeah, the matrix is a lot larger than I imagined when you first described the game to me. So I figured with the size of it, it'd be really hard to actually put two numbers next to each other. Right? There's so much space that you could put things in.
We came pretty close.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, there was the one.
It's the tactical thing. But it is feasible to do it even in the game that we play. But the matrix is
grows,
big.
You have more space to plug the numbers wherever you want.
Seemed bigger than a game. So that, and then I thought, oh, it's going to carry over. Exactly, like it would save.
Hmm. Which makes a lot of sense then, yeah.
Yeah.
You're supposed to judge a character's risk of failure based on whether a normal person from that time could achieve what they're doing.
I was an accountant.
Yeah.
Then I love how you said that in a kind of a boring voice. I was an accountant.
That's my normal voice.
Yeah. Sorry.
First resume was ninja.
But we actually didn't use your skills or your resumes all that much. There were a few roles that we made, but.
Yeah, call center guys didn't really work much in the Old West.
yeah, I know.
Or sushi chefs for that.
Yeah. So I guess that kind of brings us to the mission I sent you on. So I ran the game, and...
Sorry, can I just add one more thing?
Yep.
It is a humorous game, and it's written in a humorous way. So
yes.
The rule book. And the resources that are designed to be given to the players, the handouts, are written in a humorous way.
Yeah.
I think I've used humorous enough.
I'm sorry, the presentation they're written in a humorous way.
And I laughed three times.
Which is two times more than I usually laugh on an average day.
Four.
Actually, I did laugh at the handouts when I was reading the rule book.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it got to the game, reading them again, I already knew the jokes. But we'll get into the gameplay.
Yeah.
But it's very much a lighthearted, fun game.
Absolutely. Until characters start killing and shooting people in the kneecaps.
And we did that in a lighthearted and fun way.
I said it right over the game. I think this is the most I've ever laughed in a game session. It was, I had a great time.
All right, well, I'm glad to hear that. Because I was
I concur.
This is the most I've laughed during an episode.
I believe I smiled several times.
Both sides of my mouth.
Yeah. Because, I guess, the system is very open, right? And the book does give you a few paragraphs of suggestions on how to run games. But because the stats and mechanics are so, at least for the characters, are so minimal, I kind of had trouble building the adventure. Because the characters can go anywhere and any when in time. And that's all of history to play with. And sometimes you need a basic idea, or you need something to spark an idea for an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wasn't pulling one up until finally I just said, okay, I think it'd be cool to send them to the Old West. What can I do with that? And I said, oh, my grandmother's originally from Coffeyville. I remember as a kid wearing this shirt, this horrible shirt with the picture of the Dalton gang on it with all of them laid out with all their bullet holes in their body.
It's a horrible
shirt. Yeah, I thought so too. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll do something with that.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be interesting if, the Daltons successfully robbed the bank?
Mm-hmm.
Because then that would change history, causing a paradox. And I said, if they do it, well, then something had to go back in time and change history.
Mm-hmm.
Because history won't just change on its own. And as I said in a previous episode, I had been watching a lot of Leverage at the time, and I said, I don't know what else to do. Screw it, I'll send back the Leverage team.
Time Bandits.
Yeah, Time Bandits. I'll send back the Leverage team, and they will be setting up to rob the bank before the Daltons do.
Mm-hmm.
So that everything will change. And I guess the reason that would cause paradox is Coffeyville, Kansas is famous for this robbery attempt, this horribly failed robbery attempt. If somebody goes back in time and changes that so that it's not significant anymore, then they won't have the motivation to go back and attempt this robbery, causing paradox and causing time to unravel.
I think part of the premise of the game, again, this kind of goes with the lighthearted thing, this is a little bit confusing. When we were sent back in time as an attempt, we just kind of appeared in the Old West with nothing. We didn't have any money of the time period. We didn't have the clothes for it. I guess the game works so that you can speak the language, but we were playing characters who could anyway, so not a big deal there. But it just completely added to ludicrous situation. You know, every time we ran across a person, we had to explain why we were dressed in t-shirts and jeans.
Or well, except we didn't have to. We never once had to explain why we were dressed that way.
Yeah, we did. I remember we I lost a bet. We
talked to the Nate did say that at the beginning.
And it was...
Oh, the one person.
Yeah, it was kind of a... When the other time bandits were there, I mean, obviously we were given away right away by our address. Then not having money, so we had to go to the general store and pawn off these ration bars that we were given. And
that was the best thing.
That was a ton of fun. Like, it was a completely ridiculous city. We pretended that they were Boston cakes because we're from Boston.
And none of us could do a Boston accent. But hey, people in Kansas don't know. It was from South Boston, Georgia.
It was just a lot of fun. It was very unuseful. Useless to be thrown back in time like that. But it was a lot of fun.
Part of the reason why I did that is because the game is called Time and Temp. And in the sort of the Game Master section, it says on this side of, the time portal, your characters are supposed to be absolutely ignored. They're inconsequential. They're nobodies. And they should feel that way kind of on this side of the time travel. We didn't spend a lot of time in the office before you got sent back. But yeah, I figured I'm going to play up the fact that these people are going to treat you like temps and kind of you're kind of beneath their notice. That's why you didn't wear them. And fair enough, they were kind of scratchy, but I had even made those name cards that said, "Hi, my name is Temporary Worker," and handed them out. I don't know. I think kind of the lack of preparation and the lack of supplies. Yeah, it does. Maybe with the wrong group, it could be very frustrating. You didn't give us anything. How are we supposed to accomplish this mission? But they're supposed to understand it's supposed to be like a fun game. And you guys came up with like really good ideas to get around those handicaps and that kind of enhanced the hilarity of the game. But it's also kind of like, no, this is all we're sending you with because you guys are nobodies. So.
It really doesn't make sense. But I mean, it's a game about time travel, but if people want to play a game that's even somewhat plausible, then yeah, this is not the game to do. This is the game to sit there and make as many jokes as you can. And of course, they would never send you back into time in ancient Rome wearing a t-shirt and jeans and a...
With zero training.
zero training.
They did have some training.
Oh, we had 3-hour seminar to learn a language we didn't need to learn.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no real reason for us to go back into time as a temp worker. You know, it's like, oh, it's going to be very dangerous. Yeah. See ya. I was like, well, and we played. It was like, well, I now tried the door. The door is locked. And of course, my character was like, well, I don't really want to do it, but I, out of character, I said to Chris, just press the button so that we go.
Yeah, I believe the joke at the beginning was shortest game ever. The door shuts, I open it again and leave. I quit.
Yeah, which is what would happen.
Yeah.
But, and again, like, okay, now we have, and we didn't even bother to try to change into proper clothing. We sold enough of these ration bars, selling them as the Boston cakes, which are better than buffalo jerky.
Pemmican,
which we didn't know what pemmican was, so we're like...
Oh, yeah, pemmican, these are way better than pemmican.
Yeah.
Turns out that pemmican is jerky, yeah.
Actually, well, they probably were better, yeah.
I have to say, what I thought you guys were going to do when you went to the general store, I thought you were going to sell those ration bars, or at least trade those ration bars for period clothing and supplies.
No, we got $1.50.
You got $1.50, and then you went and bought booze with it at the saloon.
No, we walked back into the saloon and said, I'll have a whiskey, a shot of whiskey, and then just turned to Chris and said, I just always wanted to do that.
I was like, I want to. Can you slide it down the bar?
Can you slide it down the bar, yeah.
And we did, and there was times when we would actually be speaking in character, where you thought we were speaking out of character, because we're having a lot of fun, but we're actually doing is like, I can't believe you said that, or whatever.
Well, like when the situation got rather intense, and we actually had to shoot somebody, and then it's kind of, I'm a mail worker. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Or then one of the people who actually watched Leverage or Friday Night Lights and know Voodoo Tate, that was part of the Leverage team, and so he's a African American guy in the Old West. We figured out that they were fellow time travelers, and we were trying to trip them up, getting them to react in a way that they wouldn't normally. And one of them was, I bumped into him and said, get out of my way, N-word. And so he punches me in the mouth, which was something that somebody from our time period would do.
Yeah.
And rightly so. So then later on, when we had the drop of them and then had the gun, and by the way, I just said, I've never said that word before.
I'm really sorry.
I'm glad things have changed in the last century, but you know something? When you go back into time, you got to play the role.
And then he shot him in the foot.
I gave him a choice.
Which foot do you want to be shot in?
Yeah.
I did think that scene was pretty funny because, as I said, the mechanics, the player can either set how much effort they're putting into achieving this task. Or the player can set what the effect is going to be when they succeed.
Yeah, that's
going
to be my biggest criticism of
the game. It's a little... I think I was explaining it wrong, but...
Well, if you could just actually explain this. If you imagine a grid, and it's a 3x3 grid, on the top is, let's say, effort.
Right.
On the side is effect. And then, of course, you have like a D10 or D12 all the way down to a D4, depending on how much effort and how much effect is going to happen.
The three levels were minor, major, and
extreme.
Yeah.
Or extensive.
Extensive, yeah.
Right. So, for example, usually the bigger the die, the better for the matrix, because you have a wider variety of numbers to choose from. So like a minor effect and a minor effort would be a D12, or an extensive effect and an extensive effort gives you a D4.
The way we were reading the rules, there should be some sort of negotiation where the player decides one. Let's say they decide how much effort they're doing.
Or what the effect they want to be.
Yeah, I guess the player would say, and we use an example from the game, is like, I wanted to grab somebody's gun. Hmm. So... Wayne says, how much effort do you want to do? Well, of course, a lot.
Yeah.
I'm trying to grab somebody's gun, because if I fail, then they're going to turn the gun on me. And then that's the goal. And I figured that was enough. And I think Wayne was like, well, do you want to choose the effect dice or the effort dice? And I don't really care about choosing the dice. Mm-hmm. I'm going to spend a lot of effort, and that's my goal. You determine if that goal is a big effect or an extensive effect, a major effect, or a minor.
Yeah, it kind of goes against how... Like, in most role-playing games, the player will declare what their action or what their intent is, and then the game master will decide how much effort it takes or what the difficulty is, and the player will roll against that. But in this, the kind of negotiation, the player, of course, player will state their goal, so kind of going in and trying to state how much effort they're putting in doesn't really make much sense.
I think maybe at the beginning, I was kind of interpreting effect incorrectly. I was thinking of the effect as in how much effect will this have on you guys or the people involved in the situation. Where now I'm looking at it and I think the effect is supposed to represent how much will your actions affect the fabric of time in this situation, right? So if it's like a minor effect would be like, I don't know. I think one of the examples they have is delaying a guard. It's a very sort of minor effect in the scope of what happens in history.
Same thing, we were playing against time bandits. They're also from out of time, so messing with them doesn't affect the timeline. So it's a minor effect. I remember when we did the time travel episode, when I remember saying that same thing, though, that it would be cool to have a mechanic for how much your actions are affecting the timeline. And it seems this is what Evadiah has tried to do.
I think there's more of the matrix and the anomaly stuff that comes after you make the roll to see these skills.
To see the effects of it, yes.
Yeah. I think the matrix and that did a good job of capturing that and the anomalies that came up.
I agree. I think the matrix is genius. I think it was really well thought out and put together. But I think the skill roll, the effort versus effect, I don't think that worked very well.
I guess when I was setting up the adventure, because I used a real historical event that had already happened. I said, okay, somebody must have gone back in time to prevent this thing from happening, which is why paradox is going to happen. To do that, that means they're going to need to have the ability to choose when they go back in time, which means they're going to have the equipment to do that. But some of the other threats, some of them don't have time travel abilities. Some of them are just kind of, they get pulled through a wormhole because of an anomaly or some other kind of wacky
aliens or
some other kind of strange thing happens where they'll affect time, but once you deal with them, they won't have the ability to come back.
Yeah, and it's also like they're saying we have to fix time because that will destroy reality as we know it. And we're like, well, how do you know it's destroyed? Because if they go and make a change, then that change has always been because they've made the change. Mm-hmm. So they're like, okay, this is what historically should have happened, but it actually never happened. So you're like, how do you know that?
I thought Wayne dealt with it really well. He just had like a lady talking to a couple of times. You haven't read the manual, have you?
That was me saying, just go with it.
We weren't trying to bust on you, but that is one, not problem, but that's one thing that a game master can actually play with. That reality is starting to change, for example. Maybe reality takes a long time to catch up. One idea for Time and Temp was to do with Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Mm.
And it turns out that the vampires actually exist. And so what they do is they get a time machine to go back in the time to convince Bram Stoker or eliminate Bram Stoker so he never writes Dracula. Because Dracula actually gets people kind of believing into vampires and knows all their weaknesses because he managed to write them all down. So they kind of take over the world. So the time travelers have to go back to convince Bram Stoker, no, you got to write this Dracula novel. It's going to save the world. So how to represent the changes in time that the vampires have done was to have the temp agency start to take on like vampiric features, like vampire teeth and things like that.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, well, if you don't know, I'm not used to talking with these teeth. So it's like a slow, gradual change, but like vampires are taking over the world and kind of representing that. But again, it would all be done for comedic effect.
It's supposed to be a lighthearted
game. It's a very lighthearted game.
Until you break someone's leg. The one thing I have to say about the game is, as the game master, I think they call it the general manager, just like it kind of took me a little bit while, or a little time to get used to the-
Hey,
yeah. I was surprised Chris didn't do his ba-dum-punch. Yeah. Yeah, see, future me came back in time and said, do that joke. Like, I had to get used to the NPCs kind of only being as effective as the players let them be. If you watch the show Leverage, the team is really capable, right?
You said it well last time, competence porn.
Yeah, competence porn, right? They can do pretty much anything. But because of the way the mechanics work, and because the players can always choose to succeed by taking that lowest die, the players pretty much dictate how effective the NPCs are.
Players have almost as much control, if not more, than the GM.
I think they actually have a bit more control, which is fine. I just remember the, the first time you confronted the fake marshal.
Yeah.
Right. And in my head, I'm thinking, you know, I watched Leverage. Okay. Elliot, he's pretty tough. He could take both of you guys on. And then you're just like, okay, so what are you going to do? And Chris says, I'm going to grab my effect is going to be, I'm going to grab his arm and stop him.
Well, Elliot swung
at Chris. Yeah, went to swing him. And like, okay, what are you going to do? I'm going to grab his arm and stop him. And Lyle said, and my effect is going to be, I get his gun. And I said, oh, okay, great, roll. And I succeed, says Lyle, and I succeed because Chris. And I said, great, so now you don't get punched and you have his gun. Wow, that was...
pretty good for an accountant.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, exactly.
Versus a professional hitter.
Exactly. So that's when I realized, I'm like, okay, obviously this isn't sort of like other role-playing games, and I'm just going to kind of have to not build consequences, but have interesting things happen because of the actions you succeeded on. So it's almost a little bit like the, I don't really know what to do here. And so two guys walk in with a gun.
I suppose you could take it as a reaction situation, kind of like what there was in Marvel. For example, when Parker, cowboy lady, came in, I went to point my gun at her, and then she swept my leg. So I had to roll as to what happens. And so I rolled I'll shoot the gun and shoot.
Yeah, you succeeded. I choose to succeed.
Exactly. But you could maybe limit what the player's choices are. Like, she's going to sweep you and trip you. And you can just kind of make that as a declaration. And then you have these to choose from. What do you want to do? I don't know.
It's pretty tough because NPCs don't even have stats.
Yeah. It's a light enough freeform game that I don't think it'd be too bad for the game master just to declare what happened. Like, he punches you, you're on the ground coughing. What do you do now?
Yeah, but if the player said, I take the lowest die and I succeed, I don't really think I can do that, right? Like, in that example, you say, okay, I'm going to shoot her. That's what my effect is going to be.
Can I just cut in here?
Yeah.
Because we're saying the player can choose to take the lowest die and succeed. And that's exactly how it sounds, because people who, you know, playing other games,
right,
role-playing games, might think they're talking about the die that's below the difficulty level.
No,
and it's not. If you roll 2d12 and you roll a 12 and an 11, 11 is the lowest die.
Right.
There is no difficulty number that you're rolling against.
Yeah.
And I suppose if you rolled all 12s or all 8s,
they would all be the lowest die.
And we actually got a little bit lucky in our last roll. We rolled 4d6. And we needed a 2, and we rolled 2 2s, and it happened to be our lowest die, so that was perfect. Not only did we succeed, but we got to finish one of these patterns on the matrix to get one of these synchronicity bonuses. And these are real game changers. Like, these are not, like, plus one to your roll.
These are the things where I come back later and give myself a key to this door.
Right. Yeah, so the first one we use is called Epiphany, and the players choose. They just get the point, and then you can choose from a list, and they're all really powerful. And the first one we chose was Epiphany, and we were having a little bit of trouble determining where the Dalton brothers were.
Right, you had to make sure they attempted to rob the bank and died in the process.
And we also had to make sure that 4 civilians died and the town marshal.
Yeah.
We were worried about that afterwards. We're like, so what if one of them, do we have to go and cap a civilian?
A little off topic, but at the end of the game, we're like, and how many civilians die? And Wayne goes, 4 die. I'm not going to make you go kill some random kid.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have names either, so it just had to be 4 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry, so back to what I was saying. So we chose Epiphany. So we said the Dalton brothers are in the saloon.
Can I just cut in as a general manager? That was a complete game changer because up until you said that, the Dalton brothers were not in those rooms. The only people in those rooms were the leverage team, and the Dalton brothers were outside the town waiting. And at that point, it's kind of the bad guys. All they were going to do is rob the bank first and then spread the word across the town before they robbed the bank that the Dalton brothers were going to show up and, you know, spread the news around enough to deter the Daltons from showing up the next day. So the Daltons weren't even there until Lyle spent that synchronicity token to have an epiphany and say, the Dalton brothers are upstairs. And
we connected it to the story in that, hey, why is that team? We actually didn't know how big the team was. So we said, why did they rent out all the rooms? Turns out they rented out all the rooms so each person could have their own. But we said, oh, they're actually renting it out because the Dalton brothers are there too. And they've reserved the rooms because they're going to double cross them.
So planning the adventure
is pointless.
No, it's not pointless, but it's one of those. I think it
adds to the time travel aspect, actually. Mm-hmm. And the other synchronicity that we got, or bonus that we got, was a hidden agent.
Yes.
And we were stumped. We're like, we have a plan, but we're supposed to set up an ambush. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do something that'll spook the Daltons. We want them to go through with their bank robbery. So then we spent this for hidden agent, and suddenly we had a person who was going to secretly tell the marshal that the Daltons were robbing the bank at that point in time.
I actually thought that was really cool, because that's exactly what happens in history. Somebody recognizes the Daltons as they ride into town, which sets off the ambush.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really cool when you guys said, and we'll have a hidden agent, and he's going to go tell the town marshal that the Daltons are here. And I said, great, because I think it's kind of cool how the fiction you guys came up with actually supports historically what actually happened. I thought that was pretty cool.
Like, totally planned.
Yeah, totally planned. Yeah, I'm sure. I believe at one point I said through the side of my mouth, just make it the town marshal guy. But
sorry, was it clear why that plays into the time travel? It's just showing that time is malleable and the story is really malleable. Oh. So the players having so much control over the story, I think, really captured the spirit.
By that time, the game was kind of over, and he said, okay, yeah, and he runs and tells the marshal. But if it had been earlier in the game, you guys could have kept that character with you and had him interact with people for a lower paradox risk.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it would have been pretty cool. But I guess getting back to planning the adventure, I guess it is a little bit kind of pointless to plan the adventure because so many things can happen, right?
I was just joking around when I said pointless.
Well, it's not pointless, but you definitely have to go at it in a different way. Like, so all I had prepared for the adventure were some index cards with people's names on it, like the five people involved in like the Dalton gang, maybe like a short description of like a personality and maybe what their goals were. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing for kind of the leverage team. I had written down their names, the cover story they had invented, their names for the identities they had assumed, and again, kind of what their goal was and like a timeline of their plan. But like, again, setting it up, I'm like, there are so many ways that the PCs can sort of tackle this problem or attempt to find out what's going on, that all these parts have to be really flexible. And
yeah, it's really, you just kind of set it up and go sandboxing, right?
Yeah, it is. You just kind of set it up and you let the players loose and you just kind of have to roll with the punches. Yeah, not that you got punched, but not that you guys did anything like crazy.
Actually,
but
I did. We both did. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you guys got punched and you knocked people out. Yeah. But, yeah, kind of wherever the story goes, you don't really have the, nor should you have the ability to say, no, that doesn't happen. You just have to say, great, okay, that happens, and what happens next?
Yeah.
I think the way to do it is, and you did this, Wayne, is to take a real historical event and get as many details as you can of what happened, like the date, the time, you had the body count, because that forces the players to go back to make sure that this event happens exactly the way it should. How they do it then is completely open. They still have to keep trying to get things back to that specific event. So I think for a game master or a general manager, get a really specific event, figure out what changed it, and then the players are going to police themselves.
Yeah.
And you did something with time itself. You had a timer.
Oh, that's actually part of the rules.
Right.
Sorry. So I forgot.
So
I forgot.
Sad.
Yeah, so sad. Okay. So
part of the secret rules, Wayne?
Yeah, part of the secret rules. Sorry.
Time.
Yeah, so I guess I take it back. Kind of the quote-unquote bad guy of the story, or the thing that caused this temporal anomaly, actually does have one stat. It's basically a menace rating.
Sorry, this is like the leverage team was the anomaly?
Yes, the leverage team was the anomaly. And because of the way I answered the questions for them, they had a menace rating of 3. Because they could travel freely in time, they were actively pursuing to change something that had happened in history, and they had above average level of ability compared to the people in that time zone. So they had a menace rating of 3. And that meant every 40 minutes of actual real game time, I was supposed to check off one of the numbers on your guy's sheet.
On the anomaly scale.
Yeah, on the anomaly
tracker.
Yeah, sorry, on the anomaly tracker. And that actually kind of helped a little bit in getting the anomalies on the board because I rolled high and those dice got locked in. But that scales. It goes from about 20 minutes down to 2 hours of real time based on how dangerous this thing is.
Yeah.
And I guess from my perspective, it was kind of a nice way to not keep you guys motivated, but it kind of said, yeah, these are checking down. Mm-hmm. So you guys can kind of not futz around and not do anything, because I also intentionally only gave you 24 hours before the event historically happened to give you that sense of urgency.
Yeah, we moseyed very quickly after that.
Yeah, I moseyed, the 100-yard mosey? So how did you guys feel about that? Like,
I liked it.
It's part of the rules. Yeah,
I thought it was great. Anything that had to do with the matrix sheet, and that included the matrix, the anomaly tracker, the synchronicity patterns.
And I guess
the timer was very much linked to the anomaly tracker. I very much liked.
I think the paradox dice are actually would be part of the matrix as well.
I guess it's all connected. Yeah. The dice that you roll for the skills or the effort and the effect, I had no problem with that. Mm. I just would have preferred that the players just kind of say what they're doing and that you as the general manager just decide what dice we would. Like often we would just like hold out our hand.
Right.
Just tell us what dice to roll, because then we as players make choices after we roll the dice.
Right.
It's
too much player choice almost then?
No, I think it just doesn't. Go ahead, Chris.
We don't know the situation. We don't know the world in the same way that the general manager does. You run what's happening. So we have to base our abilities to do it off of what the knowledge in your head. And
right.
We don't know it. That's why the GM in games sets the difficulty. He knows how the situation is and what the players have to go against.
And generally, if you're doing something in a situation like this, like, as people know when they travel back in the time.
Yeah, everybody who does it.
Yeah. You're probably going to give it your all.
Right.
You know, you got 24 hours to prevent, you know, reality from being destroyed. You're not going to half-ass that.
So you're not going to mosey.
I'm going to give a minor effort on this grabbing this gun because, whatever.
Who cares?
So a lot of the times you are going to say, like, as much effort as I can.
Yeah.
So that the question of how much effort are you going to do, you're like,
it becomes kind of mosey.
This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm trying to achieve. What the consequences? What do you think it's going to be? And how much effort it is going to take against this person?
And like I said in the beginning, maybe I'm interpreting effect incorrectly. Like maybe I think effect is, as I said, supposed to be how much effect this will have on reality.
Mm.
But again, when you were fighting the leverage team, I kind of looked, I thought and I said, they're already ahistoric, right? They shouldn't be here. How much effect will you, or how much effect on the time stream will you shooting one of them have? Almost none. So the effect is, except death is always an extensive effect, but such as you attempting to like con them or persuade them to do something or even just, I guess, rough them up a little bit, it would always kind of be like a minor effect because they're not supposed to be there in the first place.
Mm.
I guess if you were, maybe then it's more dangerous to interact with the locals, you know, because you have a much larger chance of screwing up the timeline because you're changing what people are going to do.
This might be confusing. So, but if you're dealing with the people or the entities that are causing the anomaly, the more success you have in stopping them, actually the less effect it has on time overall, because that's actually helping to write time. So they're actually at odds.
Mm-hmm. Kind of an inverse dynamic.
Yeah, the bigger effect that you have on the, and what's causing the anomaly, the less effect you have on time, because that success is correcting time.
Right. Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
And because, I like that players have the ability to choose their failure and then narrate their own failure. That's something that I've only recently discovered in some of the games we've been playing, from Cosmic Patrol on. But I really enjoy that too, even when the players lose, they can say how they lose. Ah, I have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, I think it's designed to be like, you know, really, not really short, but like a one-shot sort of thing.
I really, really recommend this game for anybody who wants to do a timed game, because it's a nice, easy, light way to dip your foot into it. And then if you want to do something more serious later on, perhaps in the same or in a different system.
It might take a little while to get used to the mechanics, especially if you're going straight from like something like D&D or Pathfinder, and that's kind of all you've done. Wait, so I just kind of automatically succeed? Great. What's your result? I kill him.
Yes and no. I mean, if we're doing what we are recommending and the player just describes what they want to do, and the general manager, who obviously will know the system, determines what dice they need to roll, the matrix is actually pretty easy. But so overall, what did you think?
Oh, I had a great time. Like, it's really nice and easy to pick up, but it still has enough complicated and interesting mechanics that it leaves you with a lot to think about. It was ridiculous in a great way, and I had a lot of fun. I would like to play it again. I don't think I would want this to be my regular game, but every once in a while, especially maybe with some light gamers or at a convention, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so it's going to be my follow-up. What do you think is for newer gamers or casual gamers, so you say it was pretty good?
The mechanics might be a little hard for a new gamer to wrap his head around compared to something like with a roll to hit with D&D, but that's also coming from an experienced gamer. Maybe I'm just used to the other one.
Okay.
But yeah, Con, great. Two thumbs. Totally. Good.
How about you, Wayne?
It's a very Cosmic Patrol-esque game where it is a lot of fun, and the amount of fun you have in the game is directly related to how much fun the players are going to bring to the game.
For new players?
New players, yeah, sure. I think so long as the general manager has a good idea of how to run the game, then it'll be very easy for them to kind of explain what's going on. And if you follow the advice perhaps we suggested in this game about, you tell me how hard you're working towards this thing. And
what you want to do.
And what you want to do. Great, and now roll this many dice. Yeah. And now pick a number, put it into the matrix wherever you want. Oh, great, you know. Yeah, now tell me what happens. So, for a new player, yeah, I think it would be great. Yeah, I would definitely say like two thumbs up. Again, like Chris, for a regular game, probably not, but just like Cosmic Patrol, yeah, once in a while.
Well, I really have nothing to add. I think you guys said it all. Ridiculous in a good way, as you say, Chris. And if people are willing to have fun, then they'll have a lot of fun, like you said, Wayne. And for good players, yeah, all you really need is the matrix sheet to stick in front of your players and the synchronicity sheet when that comes up.
Yeah.
So just so they can read through the options, and even the grid can just be for the general manager. Sure, if you want to go through the, like maybe the very first time and get them into the feeling that you are a temp worker, and let's go through the bureaucracy, and there is some funny stuff in those six pages, and then go for it. Yeah, I mean we've talked about gateway games. I would put this into like a party game, like a Cosmic Patrol, where it is a game that you can get a real mix of regular gamers and casual gamers and have a really fun atmosphere, and then the rules become very much secondary to just playing a fun social game.
All right, so thumbs up all around.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, or idleredhands.com. You can listen to us right there on the website through Stitcher, through DriveThruRPG, or on iTunes. Send us an email, the link's right there on the webpage, post in our forums, or on Facebook, or anything you get a hold of us. We're always happy to hear from you. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. See you next time.
Bye.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
So much Troll Hunter.
Troll!
Yeah, so I think we've all seen it.
I thought it was pretty good.
I liked it a lot.
Silence means no. I can't say I liked it a lot, but it's certainly the troll special effects were really good. The story was okay. It's like a Blair Witch or a Cloverfield where it's done from the point of view of a camera. Like
found
a
footage, yeah.
Actually, it's very much like Blair Witch where they say it starts off, we found two hard drives.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.